Three shots, four par, I just do two. One putt, par four, birdie, woohoo. New driver, info, replace, into. Par five, fairway, what you fin do? Think I'll try to get on into. Start right, good line, good view. Andrew, shoot a McGavin.
We talked about who's that other guy from EMU that like I couldn't remember?
Michael Blair.
This is him. This is him, man. So we talked about Jake, and we're going to have Coop on. Well, we've talked to him in the last little while. Jake, well, two Jakes, Cam, and I think even somebody else. So Michael Blair was the other one that I couldn't remember. I was like, who was that? So yeah, it's been almost 3 years, Michael, since you and I chatted when he won the PI. I think that was 21.
Yeah, it was like late August, 21.
Yeah, yeah. So we've been at 2.5 years. It's crazy. Time flies, man. Time absolutely flies. So thanks for joining us, man. I know it's probably a nicer night there. I'm looking out at the clouds and stuff, but you're down in Orlando, you said. So
yeah, it's about 25, 26 here now still. So.
Tough.
Not too shabby.
Really tough. We had like a little hint of golf season up here. Well, you know how the weather works. You're from like Ancaster, right?
Yeah.
So like, you know how this world works. We got like a couple 10 degrees here. So any of the US listeners, that'd be like 50s into the 50s. Bryce, yeah. You would touch it too. You got like a week and then...
I played twice and then we got snow yesterday. So.
Yeah, that's it. So, Michael, can you give us like a little intro of who you are? I know we got some things that we definitely want to talk about, but give the listeners a little idea who Michael Blair is, because it's probably been 170 episodes since we chatted, I guess. So,
I was there in the beginning. To recap, I guess, or to introduce the people who don't know. My name is Michael Blair. I'm born in Hamilton, grew up in Burlington, and then about 15 plus years ago back to Ancaster and Hamilton area. So yeah, I went to Eastern Michigan, as you guys were mentioning there. Eastern Michigan University, played golf there. After that was 2015, I finished and turned pro in 2016. I dealt with some shoulder injuries after that, tore my rotator cuff. Kind of had a banged up left shoulder here. So that kind of was a bit of stop and start right from the get go there. So played a little bit in McKenzie Tour in 2016 when I turned pro, doing some Mondays and got in 3 or 4 events. And then really was getting pain in the left shoulder again over the winter 2017. So I didn't really do much 2017, 2018. I was kind of at that point was hitting the wall of frustration with injury where I was like, okay, I need to regain usage of my left arm. Golf was secondary at that point. So I spent most of that time rehabbing. I had a PRP injection in my left shoulder, which is platelet-rich plasma, like blood spinning, where they inject the plasma into your injury there. And then like my tendon was supraspinatus, the outer one I tore. It was basically rock hard. It was no longer moving, stretching. Also had a bone spur, some other bad stuff in there. So spent most 20 months recovering from that, more for just like quality of life. Like I couldn't really lift my arm kind of above my shoulder for a while there. So fortunately was good enough to go back to golf. Started playing again in 2019, like in the springtime. And we're coming up on the 5-year anniversary. I played the Canadian Open in 2019. Somehow miraculously qualified like 2 months removed from this debilitating shoulder injury, which that feels like yesterday and also like two lifetimes ago now. It's 5 years back at Hamilton actually this year for the Open. But so 2019, just started getting back into it and games started kind of coming together again towards 2020, which was a great time for global pandemic to hit, whereas I was getting back on the horse there. So yeah, I mean, we had the nice 2020, basically everything canceled, lockdown, stuck at home. Ontario was fortunate to be the only place in the world where you couldn't really golf or go outside. So it was fun. And then 2021, we kind of honestly had the same thing for a while. Fortunately, the McKenzie Tour decided to still play their event, like 8 events in Canada. It was a late start. It didn't start till July, I think, around July, but they still played 8 events just to be like, hey, well, they got the form tour in the States. Like, you know, we'll just do this for Canadians. They cut the purse down a bit, but we still had something to play. which is where we first spoke after I managed to win the PEI Open that year. And then earned my Mackenzie Tour card for 2022. Had an okay year. I mean, that was kind of my first, felt like full, like normal year of professional golf, 2022, even though I technically turned pro in 2016, just with injuries and stops and starts. So that was like fully your first, to me, felt like first full year of like having status, having a schedule, no interruptions injury wise or, you know, pandemic wise. And yeah, it was, I mean, it was a good learning year. Played some good golf, some not good golf, but fortunate enough to get through Q school in the fall of 2022 to earn Korn Ferry status for 2023. But unfortunately, didn't play well enough at final stage, so I was kind of way down in the priority ranking. So I just spent last year doing a lot of Mondays, trying to get into tournaments, traveling everywhere, like really not having a schedule, which was tough. I mean, it's a you can always learn things from it, but it's just a grind to, hey, I'm going to go here and hopefully I play. If not, then I'll go to another one. And you did, nothing's really set in stone. I mean, I played one Latin Tour event just to get, because I could get a start there. I think I played seven Canadian Tour events or something like that.
It's expensive too.
Yeah. So it was, I mean, traveling everywhere, last minute flight changes. I tried to, you know, obviously I tried to do it as, you know, fiscally responsibly as possible, or splitting with guys that I know, or, you know, you're not, you have a budget obviously to work within. So I tried to, I think I did pretty well, I guess, but at the end of the day, when you're not making any, and you're just, I think I played about 25 to 30 Mondays between KFT and PGA last year, missed by one a lot.
Wow.
Lost in a playoff at the RSM just in the fall here. That was probably the close. I missed by one a few times, missed by two a bunch of times, but I guess the RSM was just in like November 23. That one I finished second in the Monday, but was in a big playoff and didn't manage to get through that one. So it was a tough year that way. And I kind of felt like going into 2023 that I needed to make some like adjustments in my game. But when you have status, you're like, well, I have an opportunity now where like, if I get in one event and play decently, I can get reshuffled in, you play the whole year. Like you, all of a sudden you have a schedule, right? Mm-hmm. So I was kind of in this limbo of let's obviously try to capitalize or maximize every opportunity I do have. But on the other hand, I'm like, I don't know if I really have it, the, you know, what I, where I want my game to be, because, you know, I feel like I have some things I need to improve to really, I mean, you got to shoot 20, 25 under for 4 days, which is a lot different than trying to shoot 7 under for 1 day or something like that, you know? So, yeah. And then after that last year, I didn't keep my card anywhere really. So I'm back to square one. And yeah, and then now I figured I truly have time to make changes. So nothing on the horizon. We're back to square one with a lot more knowledge, experience, and still feel like the best is ahead for me.
So Michael, is there any like specific moment? Like I know you mentioned there were a lot of like runner-up finishes on Monday Qs and stuff like that. So
yeah,
those can get taxing. Like even like hearing you just kind of explain it, it sounds a little taxing. It's obviously, there's a lot of finances involved in that, but like, was there any like moment where you were just like, all right, like I'm just going to break it down. You know, we were talking about it before I hit record there, but we're into a swing change. So that's kind of like where I'm coming with this question. Was there a moment where you said, okay, mm-hmm. like it's time, I'm just going to break it down. I'm going to take a break. I'm going to get it like, get it worked out and get it to that next level.
Well, like in the back of my mind, when I'm playing all these Mondays, I'm like, well, there's a chance that like, if I don't get into anything, then I'm just like back to square one type of thing.
Right.
There wasn't really a particular moment. I always like, you always show up thinking like, yeah, today I'll shoot 62 and then I'll have a great week and just continue, you know, cause seriously, you are 5 days, I guess, from like changing your life. Right. I was in that kind of so close yet so far kind of stage of like, you know, having status is important, because if you just go on a Monday with no status, like it's very, especially now they keep changing the rules. I don't even think you can get status without winning anymore on either tour. Like you get non-member points and then there's very conditions on whether you can get into any more events after that. So like, even if it's conditional status, it's big to have status just because that one good finish will now move you up the list. Whereas if you're not a member, you're not really gaining anything on the points list for most mm-hmm. of these tours now, where they have change things. So I'm trying to be, you know, positive in that sense where it's like, hey, I get through a Monday and then I have a decent 4 days and like now I have a schedule. I'm set. I can just, you know, carry that momentum on and you never know what happens from there. Right. So that's golf. But it was more the wedge game where I noticed it. Like the longer clubs, what I was doing before, I could kind of get away with the longer clubs, hitting it okay. Like I drove it really well. And the longer, you know, long irons, mid irons were fine, but, what I was kind of doing was kind of tying me up with the shorter the shot got, shorter the club got. I was, you know, I practice enough to make it work, but like, I've never have a wedge in my hand and really be like, oh yeah, I could hold this. You know, it's kind of like took a lot of effort to hit it to like 10 feet. Like I could hit it serviceably, but there's no, didn't have the true feeling of like precision. The ball wasn't coming off the face consistently. The depth of my divots were kind of inconsistent. And it just was never a feeling of like, I really have control over the shorter shot. So that was the main thing for me. It's like, you know, especially, yeah, sure, in the PGA Tour, you're not hitting as many wedges, but definitely main tour golf, Canadian Tour golf, even KFT. So a lot of shorter wedge shots. And, you know, it should be theoretically easy if you're, you know, a short club, a lot of loft, ball's not really curving a lot, but just, I could sense something was off. Like I said, I didn't know what it was, you know, but so I was searching for, yeah, just some more guidance on that, some more clarity as to why I was struggling, someone that could help me turn that around. And, you know, obviously everyone, you know, say, oh, I want to make more putts, but that's, you know, if you're hitting good putts, there's only so much you can do. But like becoming a better wedge player with your strike and flight is like, you know, it's a noticeable improvement.
Yeah, definitely don't say it's easier or it's easier because you have shorter shots, though, because I'm kind of in the same boat as you. especially on a lot of the more public tracks playing from shorter yardage, I can hit the ball pretty far. My wedges are terrible and I'll go shoot 78 and probably make my strokes gain chipping are probably minus 40.
Yeah. Well, just, there's a lot more, I don't know, for me, the way I was swinging, like the longer clubs gave me more time to get the face where I wanted to, but there was just too much, but I didn't even, like I said, know where to start, like in terms of changing it. So I've always, whenever I was seeing any instructors, it was kind of like, oh, my wedge game is not where I want it to be. And that's kind of where I would start from, because I generally, my overall motion was kind of like, even though I'm a drawer of the golf ball, my overall like shape of my swing was more of like a pull cut because I was really trying to cover it on my left side and, you know, and just kind of swing left and all that good stuff. And, I like to fade it off the tee. So that worked really well with the driver. And like I said, I drove it very well. I did a lot of fairways. I still hit it far enough, you know, I might've been sacrificing say 10 yards, but with the technology and the equipment now, you can still get a fade out there, like just as far as a draw. But just, I didn't have a lot of space for the club to, that's why my complaint would always, to me, it felt like I had no space between like my body and the club. Like if you're looking at me from down the line, it felt like I was like very close to the club and the ball and kind of jammed and not letting, being able to let the club kind of release and pass by or into impact. So yeah, it was a bit of a search. And I obviously at that time, I didn't realize that the fix for that was kind of the fix for the whole golf swing. Like it wasn't like I can just make an adjustment to the wedges and that'll be fine. It was kind of an overall problem.
So but, yeah. How did that, like, so when you go to, you know, you seek out like an instructor, like you say, if you're standing like a little bit too close to the ball, like maybe somebody thinks you're like getting too steep or something. I don't, like, you know what I mean? Like, do you go with any idea or do you like kind of just go there, see what their thoughts are, see what that, you know, you said you went through like maybe about 10 different opinions before you really kind of sunk into one.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I would go with like my concerns, like, hey, I do this and this well, I don't do this and this well.
Yeah.
That's what I'm looking for. I didn't say this, but I was kind of looking for somebody to like kind of take the reins and be like, okay, this is what's happening. This is why, this is where you need to go. Cause I didn't have that knowledge.
Yeah.
So I had half the guys that were like, oh, this guy is a Korn Ferry Tour member. He must know what he's doing. And I got the impression that they were kind of a little afraid to really say anything too big because they thought, oh, we'll just make a little tweaks here. I don't want to ruin the guy. Like nobody wants to be responsible for like ruining somebody and like making a huge swing change.
Yeah.
It's a possibility that you never recover from that. Right.
Did you ever, like we've been lucky enough to chat with Brian Mifleski. He was on the way back from, I don't know, he's in the car somewhere, and we chatted for like a couple hours, him and I, just on the phone. We recorded some of it too, which was great. But, did you ever like reach out to him or somebody like in that wedge world to try to like see if that was something that you could like rectify before you got into like a, before realizing that it was a full swing piece?
Yeah. I reached out to him a while ago, like a couple of years now, but that was for putting, but I'm sure it would have, hey, over here, might as well talk about chipping and wedges. Yeah. But it's kind of a little bit of a situation where like you don't know what you don't know. So it's like, I know I need to get better, but like from here to where I want to go is kind of blurry. It's gray. I need something to fill in that blank for me. So yeah, I can only
some guidance.
Yeah. I can only give him so much information. So I want to get better.
Man, you're talking to two guys who like, know a lot of what they know they don't know. If that makes sense. Like there's a lot of that going on here. Yeah. Yeah. It's and we're searching for it. We're all searching for it. But like it sounds like it's kind of on the right path. So was there like a piece of the swing that like you're working on specifically now to fix?
I mean it's my entire swing from setup to finish is different now. So my setup, my coach is named Carl Robito. He teaches down here in Orlando and up in Bolingbrook, Illinois, near Chicago in the summers. But he didn't just say, set up like this because it looks good or because I want you to. He had a thoughtful and intelligent and reasonable explanation for everything, right? There's no... Right. Oh, just do that. Whatever you can do, whatever you want with this, or whatever feels good there. It's like there's a reason for that. Kind of a simple explanation would be: so your finger is only designed to bend in this direction, the way your joints are. So why would you try to bend it sort of in a direction that it isn't designed to bend? And with golf, I know obviously that's oversimplification. We have a lot of joints, and some things are more mobile than others. Some like your knees and your elbows can only bend one way, but like your ankles are more of a mobile joint and your shoulders and hips can move kind of, they're more ball and socket. So again, this is oversimplification, but essentially instead of making a bunch of compensations, trying to bend things, move things the way they don't move, kind of we're going to move them the way that they're designed to move. And that's also not just for hitting the ball better, but for longevity, like to reduce or basically eliminate the risk of injury as well. So that was, it was eye-opening, which is kind of like, that's what I was saying. I didn't know what I was looking for, but it's kind of one of those things when you see it, or when you hear it, So changed the setup. My grip was okay. Setup changed and takeaway changed a lot. Backswing, my backswing I'm still working on. That changed substantially, kind of everything. And then I had some of the right ideas of what I wanted to do sort of into and through impact, but I wasn't in like a position where it was anatomically possible to really do what I wanted to because of what I was doing in the backswing. So I was trying hard to cover it, swing left, all this good stuff. But I was just basically getting to left side immediately. And then like from there, the only way you can go is kind of backing up a little bit, but because I'm a good player, I'm not really going to let myself back up too much. Like, I'm not just going to like fall back on it.
You know,
like,
you're not
like an amateur. But that's, I was always, I fortunately didn't have any serious injuries, but like I would always be sore. Like I'd get some soreness in my wrists or my shoulders or my back, like, cause I'm practicing a lot. Fortunately, didn't do any serious damage, but.
Well, also those new movements too. I mean, your body's not used to them. I mean, your old swing, your body's used to that same swing every day. And once you add in some new movements or some new ways to move your body, I mean, you can get sore just from your muscles saying, oh, I don't really know this movement.
Yeah. So. Well, I noticed it wasn't like a soreness of like, oh, this is going to cause an injury. It was a soreness of like, oh, I've never used this in that way before.
Exactly. Yeah.
So kind of a new, but I actually started feeling like less tight and sore all over my body after like a month because I started using things the way they were designed to be used.
Yeah.
So try to force things to go in ways that they're not designed to be used.
So are you still hitting your normal ball flight then, like a fade off a tee and kind of like a draw everywhere else? Is that kind of what the goal is?
I mean, I started working with Carl January 1st. So it's been like 10 weeks and I probably only started making like real full swings maybe like after like 6 or 7 weeks, just because it was such a new, like such new mechanics for me that like ball flight was like 10th on the list of priorities, like hitting it. I mean, we've had full lessons where like, you know, I'll be out there for 2 hours and like, I won't even really hit the ball. Like I'll be swinging at the ball, but I'll be like missing it or like chunking it or whatever, like shanking it. I mean, what, just because I don't care to me. It doesn't matter when I'm trying to learn something where, what the ball does. I'm just trying to imprint a new like motor skill or pattern. Yeah. Because basically, I mean, your brain is gonna, like it's gonna use neural pathways or, you know, I'm not like saying I'm a neuroscientist, but from what I understand, it's gonna, you know, send a signal to your muscles from your brain, and the ones you use most are kind of the ones that are imprinted, or, you know, you look at it like the highway, like, the, you know, the 403 or whatever, that's your neural pathway that your signal gets sent down. And so I'm trying to create new ones. So like hacking a path through the forest here. So I have to do very deliberate, slow, methodical, conscious movements over and over and over and over to imprint those. If I just make a couple of rehearsals and then swing full, I'm still going to use that old, like neural pathway and muscle just keep memory, making the same, the same mistakes over and over again. So it's didn't hit too many full shots for the first, like basically 2 months, because I was just, you know, probably not going to be able to do the new movements at a full speed yet, because I didn't have those, you know, connections between the brain and muscles imprinted quite yet. So it's still an ongoing process, but we're starting to finally get through most of the hard part of the main, like the big changes, which is, I mean, the setup didn't take that long. Backswing, I'm still kind of working through, but it's like almost there, which finally is now I'm able to make more of the downswing moves that I want, because I can get into a position that will allow the proper, you know, transition and impact. Things aren't in the way, blocking each other. So yeah, we're kind of on the other side here. Like I said, there's no, obviously I'd like to get back ready to play by, you know, the PGA Tour America's Q School is like late May, early June. So hopefully be ready for that. But it's like, you know, the time's going to pass, you know, whether I make a swing change or not. So I might as well just get it over with and and be good set for the long haul.
That was kind of one of my next questions, is like muscle memory is one thing that will always try to take over. Like you're like you said, you got to Korn Ferry Tour based on like just how skilled you were working with something that maybe wasn't necessarily working completely for you. So it's still going to try, your body is always going to try and take you back there. Like we've all struggled with that in many different things. Like, you can do that in any type of like fitness movement, really. It's going to try and go back to what it knows, what it's most comfortable with. So is there any like timeline? Like it sounds like you're just kind of like open to, if it takes this long, it takes this long. It's like we're working towards something bigger.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know how long it's supposed to take, should take. I'm just kind of following the lead of Carl here. He's kind of putting my trust into him. But like I told him beforehand, kind of what my goals were in my timeline, like, you know, obviously with the what events are coming up, I was hoping that, you know, that 5-6 months would be kind of enough to make to be at a playable level. Like I'm not kind of guy to think like, hey, I can make a swing change in like 2 weeks, I'll be good. Like normally a major swing change is probably gonna take at least like a year. But I was like, hey, is there any, you know, hopefully can we make this, you think, playable in 5-6 months? And so he was adamant that that would be possible, and now kind of like I said, about 10 weeks in, it looks to be like we're on the right track here, starting to see some results. And the ball flight, when I, you know, make a full swing, it's pretty straight. I would say it draws slightly, but it's mostly just kind of a straight ball for now. But I mean, it that kind of depends what I'm working on. The swing isn't, you know, fully, it's not done. Like I wouldn't I would say I'm probably, I don't even know, 70%. 60-70%. So depends what we're working on. Some days it'll be drawn, some days it'll be fading, some days it'll be high, some days it'll be low. It kind of depends on that specific piece that we're working on. But overall, at the end of the day, it should be pretty straight, pretty neutral, not a whole lot of movement, and very repeatable and injury-free, which is the main thing.
Well, yeah, because that was one of the things that, like, when you mentioned it right off the hop, you're saying, you know, you're somebody who's golfing every day pretty much. Like, you're out playing even Mondays, you know, hopefully – you know, getting into pro-ams on Wednesdays and then playing a full week and weekend, right? Yeah. So like some days you're playing 6 days a week and probably practicing on the one off day that you might get. So when you were talking about like your divot patterns not being, you know, being a little bit less shallow or chunkier than, you know, some of them, it's kind of one of those things where that's got to be incredibly frustrating for you to think like, which one am I going to hit? Like, which one am I going to, like, which shot am I going to hit when I'm, when I'm 100 yards out or whatever it might be, right?
Yeah. So I mean, I felt like I was doing the same thing, but, and that was the most frustrating thing is like, as much as I practice, like something has to be wrong because I can't be, feel like I'm doing the same thing over and over and over again. And like balls kind of not flying, like coming off the face consistently. It's not flying consistently. I'm like, this is, you know, I'm doing something wrong here. And I'm talking at like a professional level. Like if someone was just watching me in the range, they'd say, oh yeah, this guy hits a great same every time. But like, I can feel that, like, you know, if it's going, even on a wedge shot, if it's going 8 feet left, 8 feet right, you know, that's a big dispersion. It's like, why am I can't start it online every time? I mean,
yeah,
if you go watch a tour venue, they, you know, I'm not saying they want to hit to, they're going to hit to a foot every time, but they're going to start it online more times than not. They're not going to be, they're going to make the same motion over and over and have, you know, different start lines and different curves and heights and spins and, you know, not that level.
And my game's in a tough spot. I'm realizing I'm in a bad spot right now. I'm in a bad place, Bryce. I got a lot of work to do, man. It's if we can, Michael, like we mentioned that you're from Ancaster. So can we take it back to 2019? You played in the Canadian Open. That was like one of the biggest, obviously we had the biggest Canadian Open in history last year with Nick Taylor winning. Like it's going to be impossible probably to even beat that with a 72-foot putt, but from a Canadian, which is amazing. But prior to that, that Rory year was like one of the biggest ones. I remember like coming up on the 18th behind like the 18th green at Hamilton was just like saturated with people. Big year. You're a young guy. Unfortunately, you didn't make the cut, but what was the experience like for you? Kind of how'd you get into it? And then what was that week like, or even the time like leading up to it? What was it like kind of getting ready for an event like that?
Yeah. Yeah. So that was right after I was coming off the shoulder recovery. So I started playing basically March 1st, I started playing again, and the qualifier was like early May, I think. So it was like maybe just over 2 months, and I was like, was not playing well at all, obviously. I hadn't really touched a club much for about 2 years. But I mean, you always sign up for Canadian Open qualifier. I mean, that's, as Canadians, that's kind of the one tournament you want to win. I mean, you could say, some guys I'm sure would say, oh, I want to win the Masters number one, but like it's 1A, 1B is Canadian Open. Probably, especially being in Hamilton, and I live 5 minutes down the road from Hamilton. It's like my favorite golf course ever. So yeah, it was the, in the Canadian Open, the pre-qualifier, they have the only difference with that versus other tour events. If you win the pre-qualifier, you get an exemption into the golf tournament. So normally you go to the pre-qualifier and then you go to the Monday, and it's four spots on the Monday. But if the pre-qualifier, I think there's five-ish different pre-qualifiers of the Canadian Open. And if those fields have more than 100 players and you win, then you get right in. So it was at TPC Toronto on the North Course. I think I'd broke 75 maybe once in 2 months before. And I went out there and shot 64, shot 8 under somehow. The North Course, just, I don't know, I had a good day, I guess. Didn't really have much expectation. And I finished real early, like 11:30. I was like almost the first, if not the first, one of the first tee times of the day. Finished around 11:30 in the morning, and I waited like the entire day to see if anybody is going to match that or be that, because there's only one spot. So if someone tied me, would have had a playoff for the Canadian Open spot at the end. And so I was in, I guess where that was at, like Orangeville, Caledon area.
Yeah.
So I couldn't go home. I like back to Ancaster.
No, there's nothing.
So yeah, I just basically just sat there. I don't even know what I did. I think it was with my dad. I think we were going to like try to see a movie or something. I don't know. I don't think we did, but just hanging around, waited the whole day, basically till sunset for the last groups to finish. And then was fortunate enough to win that. And yeah, I got right in, and the week was awesome. I played a bunch out there, probably 2 or 3 weeks prior to the Open, just because I was so close. I just emailed the head pro and, okay, I'm in the Open. Can I come out here a little bit and check out the golf course? Game was still not very good, but I'm just going to give it my all, try my best, and played a practice round with Padraig Harrington. I remember that was awesome. He was like the nicest guy ever, just like complete gentleman and awesome guy. And yeah, I had a really fun time. I remember, even though I didn't like feel confident about my game, I remember feeling like very calm inside the ropes, which I thought was good because I expected to be nervous because I didn't, like I said, I didn't have much confidence in my game leading up to that point. I didn't really have much reason to. I was not shooting any good scores besides the score to qualify. So yeah, not having a Monday queue was nice for that. And yeah, it was an awesome week. I took advantage of everything I could. You know, I hung out in the clubhouse on the weekend still, you know, in the players lounge, and was there every day, even though I missed the cut. And, you know, it was fun. Like I said, I felt surprisingly like calm inside the ropes, which that was kind of, I thought, big for me. It was like, okay, you know, I have no game, especially relative to where I think I am now. I have like no game at all. And I still feel like okay inside the ropes. I think I started in the back nine. I think I bogeyed 18 to shoot one or two over, which is like, yeah, that's not too bad. Like that course is playing so hard. The rough was like thickest. I mean, Rory won by like nine or something, but I, you know, that was also a fun fact. Me and Colin Morikawa both made our PGA Tour debut that week. I think that was Morikawa's first event. I think he finished like 10th or something. But I think like 8 under was top 10. I mean, it was like very, very difficult. Somebody who had no game coming into that, it was a bit of a struggle, even though, like I said, I only shot one or two over in the front, which was, you know, good. I felt calm, tried to soak it all in and do my best. But you know, now, like I said, that feels like yesterday, but also feels like I'm not even the same person as like two lifetimes ago. So, hoping that can get this, you know, swing change and this game sorted out and try to get back there again for my 5-year redemption here at the 2024 Canadian Open, because I don't feel that's obviously representative of my abilities, but yeah, it was a great time just to be there at that point.
Oh man, like you said too, like you mentioned it earlier, like you just got to play well, like a couple days in a row, put it together, and it can change your whole year too, right? You don't mm-hmm. really know. You can grab status somewhere based on that. So hopefully you're there. I'll be there watching for sure. I'm sure Bryce might even, that's not too far for you, Bryce. You might even come over.
No, I think we're going to try to make the trip down this year for it.
Yeah, it'd be pretty good. So, now if we can go back a little bit further. So I think when we first met, we quickly said hello at TPC. I was carrying mm-hmm. for Jake that week. And, I think we like, we're hitting balls with you on the range, I believe. I think that's where we first kind of met, and I was just caring for Jake mm-hmm. that week. But
yeah.
And then a little bit, a couple weeks later, you're down PEI and you went down there. So we mentioned it before. That was ages ago. It's probably back in the archive somewhere. But what was that experience for you getting that first pro win?
Yeah, that was a good one. That golf course, it was like the first 2 days was pretty benign conditions, and the scoring was decent. And I think I don't know if I was either tied for the lead. I was either leading, tied for the lead, or like one back through two rounds, something like that. And then that same score ended up winning through four rounds because I started blowing 45 for mm-hmm. Saturday, Sunday. So that was, I mean, I just had met a guy earlier in the week that was a friend of a friend who was like, hey, you need a caddy for the week. And I was like, yeah, not really, but like, sure. So someone to talk to. I don't know if that helped or not, but like the conditions were just so hard on the weekend. The course was firm and fast. It like completely changed from Thursday and Friday.
Right.
So I didn't even have time to really think about like, oh, I'm leading. Oh, I'm not leading. I'm one back or I'm ahead. Like I think I was ahead or a couple behind, like switching throughout the third and fourth rounds, but like it was just so much concentration of just like, you miss hit this, it's gone because it's 45. Blowing 45 in a crosswind on those holes. And it's like, you're so focused on just keeping it in play and being committed and making the best swing you can, that there wasn't really time to think about. And plus there wasn't a ton, I think there was a few leaderboards, but it's not like a tour event, PGA Tour event where there's leaderboards all over the place. Like you don't really know, you have a sense of what the lead is at, but you don't 100% know where you stand. But, I do remember finishing birdie par birdie to what I thought was like my main goal. I was just trying to beat the guy in my group, to be honest, because he was playing pretty well as well. And I thought I was one ahead of him or so. I couldn't remember. I didn't have his card, but I was like, you know, I'm around there. And like, I just want to, you can't win or nothing good can happen unless you're low in your own group. Right. So, I remember that was just kind of my focus, was to get through the tough stretch there in the middle. I think the like 13, 14 was kind of some of the tougher holes. And then the ending was like drivable par four, par three with like a 45 yard drop off a cliff, and then a short par five. So you can kind of make up some ground there at the end. And yeah, I mean, that was exciting to hit. Like looking back, I think I didn't really miss a shot on the final nine. So that was kind of like a good feeling to be like, hey, you know, I'm right in the thick of things. And, you know, I'm at the point where it's the conditions are so hard. If you don't execute on a shot, like it's just ball's gone. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that ball striking has always been a strength of mine, but really obviously is being tested at this point. And yeah, to hit all the shots that I needed to coming in and, to make those couple birdies to finish was really enjoyable. And like, I was shocked that I was even like potentially to be in a playoff when I finished. I thought I was like, I think I finished at 9 or 10 under, which is where I was through two rounds. And I was like, oh, you know, that might be top five. Like, that's good. But my goal for the year is to finish top five in the points so I can get my McKenzie Tour card for the next year. And then they're like, hey, you're a leader in the clubhouse. And I was like, really? I was a little spry. I don't know, for whatever reason. I think at some point someone got to 10 or 11 or something. And, you know, I just was like, oh, I didn't even expect that. And then all of a sudden, you know, a couple more groups come in. I was in the maybe third last group or so, something like that. And then, yeah, a guy, Max Sear, I'm sure, I don't know if you guys know him, the Canadian lefty there. He birdied 18 to tie me. And we went back to the 18th tee for a playoff. And I was just like, honestly happy to I felt awesome in the playoff. I was just happy to be in a playoff because I didn't think that I had a chance at nine or whatever I finished out had a chance to win. And I got up and down from the famous bunker front left on 18 there. It's like a 10-foot deep bunker that they all talk about and it's on all their their website and everything at that golf course. And managed to get up and down out of that for birdie to win. And it was, I mean, it was awesome. It was kind of, it wasn't like you made a putt to win where like, you know, you make this, it's over. It was kind of like I made the putt and then Max had a chance to tie. Mm-hmm. So I didn't get the chance for like the full celebration victory win. But I mean, you know, you're not going to complain about a win, right? You take any way you get it. And that was definitely a special one. And yeah, one I'm very proud of.
I feel like getting out, like up and down out of that bunker too. I remember kind of following it along because you and I think chatted after the second or third round, like just quickly, like on Instagram mm-hmm. or something like that. And then I sent you a message and I remember you just like, I think it was that night you were just like laying in bed. You were like gasped and you were yeah. just like, yeah. just like, you're just so yeah. happy though. Right. It's just like, it's gotta yeah. be just such a relief too. So then that kind of like mm-hmm. goes into 2022. And then I think you finished mm-hmm. like third or fourth, right. In the order of merit in 2022.
Yeah. So yeah. I've 2021. Yeah. And then, but yeah, I mean like thinking you can win and then winning is like yeah. different things. Right.
So yeah.
And then, yeah, that was, I think I can't remember if I finished fourth or fifth. Right at the end, there was like a kind of a scenario where like if a couple guys finished first and second, I could have got knocked out. But
right,
yeah, managed to finish in that top five, which was great. And then move on to 2022. I top 10 the first event. I was leading the first event in Victoria that year. That was a full year of McKenzie Tour and got sick on Friday night and kind of limped my way into a top 10. And then that was kind of an up and down year. But like I said, finished with getting through Q school in the fall. So right. it was kind of just a journey of learning a lot, figuring things out. You know, definitely the year before 2021, the traveling was, I thought, helped a lot because we played eight events, but it was so condensed. It started so late that we played eight events in 9 weeks or something like that.
Yeah.
And then I also had played the week off. I think I played the Canada Cup in Quebec. So it was like nine events in 10 weeks or something. And like learning how to travel on Monday, play for 6 days, and then travel again on Monday and do that 9 out of 10 weeks was definitely helpful. You know, even though I didn't have the best year, 2022, didn't keep my card in the Canadian Tour. I missed that by a couple points. And then, but yeah, then getting through Q school. I think Q school has got to be the ultimate test of your kind of mental and physical. It's, you know, that was my actually first attempt ever actually at Q school. So I kind of had no expectations going into that. I was You know, disappointed with my finish on the Canadian Tour in 2022, but I was like, you know what? You know, I had enough good finishes and
yeah,
to where I, you know, I still think I can do it, obviously. But just that was the first kind of either non-COVID year or non-injury year where I could go to KFTQ school. And, you know, I know that it's hard, but like when you've never done it, you're like, yeah, why, you know, I'm just playing golf. Like, why can't you make it through?
Well,
and, sure enough.
We had heard that from quite a few guys. I remember Ty Salone kind of like stands out when he's telling us about that. Cause he got through to, I think, final stage, and he was just like, it's, Zach said the same thing, Bryce, where he's just like, you just have to like, you have to go as low as you possibly can. Right. Like it's, there's no like just trying to shoot a number to get into a weekend or something like that. Like you're trying to shoot as low as you possibly can every single time you're out there. So it's almost like I don't know, feel like a bingo machine or something, man. You're just hoping to be the ball that gets like popped, right? It's just, there's just all like the, I guess, skill, like the variance and the disparity, like between the skill levels from like the players playing like at the top of the Canadian Tour or Mac Tour or whatever it was at the time to like, you know, even like guys that are playing PGA Tour, like there's not that much difference. We're seeing that with like Etienne Papineau, like Paps right now. Like he is. A little while ago, he was on for episode 150, and at the time, like he might have been one of the best players on the planet at the time. Like he beat like Sebastian Munoz and Abe Anser and like Neiman and stuff like that in the Pan Am Games. Like his game was insane at the time. Like it was absolutely crazy, right? So it's kind of goes back to that where all you need is a couple days, right? It can kind of change your life. You can be fine.
Yeah, I mean, I played that year 2022. I played a bunch with Jake Knapp, and he was just kind of again, he was kind of the same. Not exactly the same as me, but like that for him was like starting from scratch again, kind of going back to a little bit of a reset for him after he's kind of struggling on the KFT. And then, you know, sure enough, he's a year and a half later wins in the PGA Tour. So yeah, like the top guys, I mean, the top guys on the Canadian Tour end up on the PGA Tour. They're, obviously there's not the depth of the PGA Tour, of course, but, you know, the guys that are top five, top 10 for the year on that tour are going to usually continue right on. So, It's tough. I mean, it's tough to win anywhere now. Everyone's really good, and you know, you got to be on top of it and give yourself the opportunities, and then make the most of those when they come around. But yeah, like at Q school, it's just there's no, you know, you just tell yourself there's no like, it's hard, but there's no sense in being afraid of anything or worrying about the results or you know that. It's like you just try your absolute best. The whole and be as disciplined as you can. Have a game plan, try your absolute best in every shot. If you try your best and you're fully committed to what you're doing and, you know, you're not purposely making any mental mistakes and it's not good enough, then you're okay. Well, I did everything I could do. You know, the last thing I want or anyone wants is to go out there and, you know, do stupid things that you have control of, you know, like making uncommitted swings or not having a clear intent on the shot or your target or, you know, just mental errors, really not giving yourself the best opportunity, you know, letting something bother you that shouldn't be bothering you. Yeah, things like that where it's like, you know, I don't really allow myself to do my best. If you do your best and it doesn't work out, then you just go back to the range and practice and try to get better.
I love that outlook, man. That's such a good outlook.
Yeah.
I wish everybody had that outlook because it's one of those things too. And then like you can get deeper, like getting into the middle of a swing change. Like when you're just like, okay, like it's like, it's here, but you want to be here. Right. That's why like, you know, by the end of the conversation, I'm a believer. By the end of the conversation, hopefully the listeners are a believer. Michael Blair will be there, man. It'll be a PGA Tour start every week, hopefully, man. So hopefully we see you back in Hamilton this year. Would absolutely love to connect with you, say hello, but hopefully we get to see you there again. And hopefully the swing changes go well, man. I really appreciate you taking the time to kind of connect with us and share. It's been 180 something conversations now. We've never talked to somebody that's, you know, such an elite golfer that's kind of going through what you're going through right now. So it's just it's really interesting, man. Really cool.
Give you credit too, because not a lot of guys at that level would take that much time out of their game to completely change everything. So it's impressive you're sticking with it.
Well, awesome. Yeah. I mean, the way I look at it, it's like I just go through this period now to have, you know, hopefully a great 15 or 20 years after that, or I can just keep struggling and maybe never make it and have to, you know, give it up. So I'm fortunate enough to have this little window. Like it's not forever. I can't just keep not playing well and not making any cuts or any money or anything like that. You know, it's nothing's forever. So I'm fortunate right now to have a short period where I am able to try to make changes that I hope are going to, you know, help spur me on for, for the rest of my career and get that stuff out of the way and get the changes done now, and then it'll be all uphill from there.
Awesome, man. That's so cool. I hope we can have you back when you get when you kind of clean up the swing changes and stuff, when you're feeling good, when you're feeling kind of back, and you're playing regular golf. Maybe we can catch up with you after your next win, man. That'd be great.
Yeah, sure. I'd love to.
All right, Mark. Thank you.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks for having me.
He's out in my ball and of course when I tee up, I lose a ball and I re-up. I miss a fairway, I probably end up in the ocean or maybe the beach, and I'm on a par 5 and I'm finna go reach it. Second was blind, I ain't see it. Feel like it might be an albatross, worst case scenario.